Let's do the 60-second savings challenge. Step one, download Rocket Money. Step two, link your accounts and see every subscription you're paying for. Tap one you don't use and cancel it. That's money back every month. Step three, create a financial goal. $50 every paycheck. Or let the app automatically move small amounts of cash when you can afford it. In a week, you'll forget you set it up. In a month, you'll see real dollars piling up. In a year, you'll be shocked at how much money you've saved. Bonus challenge. Upload an internet or phone bill and let Rocket Money try to lower it. You only pay if they find you savings. On average, Rocket Money members can save up to $740 a year when using all of the app's premium features. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. Make saving money the resolution you actually keep. Start the 60-second savings challenge at rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Hi, I'm Katie Leeson and I'm Managing Director of Social Chain Agency UK. And welcome to my podcast, I Shouldn't Say This But. On this week's podcast, I sit down with founder of Shine, personal development coach, industry-leading body language expert, Ursuline Edwards Sutton. I wanted to get someone on the podcast to talk about body language and someone who can give me advice for both professionally and personally. And this podcast has got so much information, including how to navigate the networking events, how to be the best presenter you can be, and also how to put your best foot forward in an interview from both sides of the table. Sit back, relax, and enjoy this week's episode of I Shouldn't Say This But. Thank you very much for joining me today. On today's podcast, I have Ursuline. And do you want to describe a bit about, because I'm super excited about this podcast. Do you want to describe a bit about yourself, what you do? Because you've got a company called Shine.
Yeah.
And I want to know a bit more about Shine. So do you want to do a bit about your history?
Yeah, sure. So I actually have two companies. I have Shine, which is targeted at consumers, so individuals. And I have another company called Modus Operandi. And Shine grew out of Modus Operandi, so I'll try and explain that. So I had a long corporate career, I won't give away how old I am, and after leaving corporate life 20 years ago, I set up a business and marketing consultancy called Modus Operandi. And my job really was to go into businesses and look at strategy and change, at transformational change most of the time. And I will say that, you know, if your business is doing well, I'm not the person you normally call into it. I'm the person you call in when it's not doing very well. And so you can imagine that the reaction to that sometimes is not always what you would like. People don't always see consultants in a great way. Mm. Anyway, my point of difference is that when I go into a business, I work with the existing teams to make the change because it's important to onboard people and take them with you. And I don't have an army of other consultants. It's just me. And also I learned that, you know, the solutions are often in the business. So it's important to spot that and work with people. So where is this taking us? So as a result of that, I was often given project teams so that could work on the project because I'd only be there maybe one day, 2 days a week. And what I found was two things, that the people were very talented, but often a little bit tricky. And so I needed to understand more about how people think and process. And secondly, a lot of these really talented people were given to me on project teams, but some of them were frustrated or angry or, you know, didn't feel as if they were respected in the business or couldn't get their point across. And this whole thing about not being able to articulate their feelings or make themselves heard or even being held back from being promoted because they couldn't get across well what they wanted to say. And so it occurred to me that there was a gap in the market. And so I went off and did lots of training and I studied in NLP and certified as an NLP trainer. I'm a qualified image consultant. I studied etiquette. And what I really wanted to do was offer something to individuals for themselves, either professionally or personally, that isn't being offered generally in corporate life. And that was the premise, really, of which Shine was born. And you know, it's gone on from there, and it's been hugely rewarding for me because I got to meet some amazing people and they're all different.
Great. So what happens during a typical Shine workshop or a coaching session?
Okay, so Shine will work with people on a one-to-one generally, and if it's a group or corporate, it goes through modus operandi. So for Shine, most people come through online inquiries, but then they'll call because you have to have a conversation with somebody if they're going to be coached or trained. And the key thing is it's tailored, so it's not off the shelf. And I therefore ask quite a few questions before I put a proposal together for them to understand their needs. Clearly on the day, it starts to unfold more. So typically, we'll sit down and have a tea or coffee for 20 minutes and I'll just chat to them because I want to understand more about them. And there will be an outline for content throughout the day, and I will ask questions, I will demonstrate. We'll do interactive sessions so that they kind of role play, try it on for size. I try and match it to the industry or sector or their specific need. But often during the day, we'll go off tangent and you may think, well, that's not great. Actually, sometimes it's really good because the conversation that we will have or something will come out or I'll pick up on something. I think, oh, I need to pursue that a little bit more. And sometimes we can go back maybe 10, 20 years because often people are carrying around thoughts about themselves that were manifested 20, 30 years ago in their life and that no longer serves them well. So there's tools and techniques and practice sessions. So that will be a Shine session. Obviously, if it's more of a group, then the content is more defined in terms of, you know, you've got a set amount of time, you've got to cover a certain amount of ground. So similar, but more structured in terms of what we're going to cover.
And have you got any case studies that you could share with us about the impact that Shine's had on someone's verbal and non-verbal communication?
So it's funny because you don't want to think, oh, did I have a massive impact? But there's two that spring to mind. One was a chap who was in corporate banking in the city. And he contacted me and I also spoke to his boss. And this chap was really, really successful in his job and did a great job and was destined to carry on climbing the ladder. The only thing standing in his way was described to me as slightly rough around the edges and a little bit Essex, somebody called it. And I thought, well, OK, what's this mean? And in essence, this chap was highly capable, but he had an accent. And the funny part of the story was he was in a big negotiation and they were talking about 3 million and the client said, so how much is this going to cost me? And he said, it's free. And he said, sorry? And he said, oh, it's free. And the chap said, oh, it's free, is it? And his boss happened to be there. And of course, it was three million. So it was just a little bit of pronunciation. But also, he kind of worked against the establishment, so there's a dress code in the city and the smart casual dress is a dress code. And so rather than, you know, the button-down Oxford shirt and the chinos and a pair of Churches or brogues, he would go for the super dry shirt, etc., etc. And it just didn't gel that well. Mm. So we talked about, you know, what he was seeking to gain from this and how it served him, and etc. And we had a really productive day and he came back to see me for sort of a half day follow up. And he said, and I obviously keeping people's identities secret is quite important for people. But he said it changed things for him in work, but also with his daughter, who will remain nameless because she always used to say something like, I done it, daddy, I done it. And he said, I now correct her and say, no, you need to say I did it. And it's just little, you know, little things that can make a difference. And he thought that he couldn't communicate on topics that he knew nothing about, so cricket or rugby. And we talked about small talk and building rapport and taught him how actually you don't need to know a lot about many topics. You just need to be a good listener quite often.
I'd love some tips on small talk because we have to go to a lot of networking events in our industry.
Okay.
Do you have any tips that you could share that's going to make mine? Because I get terrified of small talk.
I teach people now to build rapport with people. It's easy to build rapport with people you like, but you need to be able to build rapport with people you perhaps don't like or wouldn't choose to spend time with, because that's what happens in business. So the kind of key tips are, is ask people questions. They love to talk. So if you can ask them questions, I call it the five W's, who, what, where, why, when, add in how and which, then providing you stay with them, and this is the key thing that most people lose, stay with them and listen, and that's hard, needs real focus, then the next question will come naturally or they'll carry on talking. If you get really good rapport, you'll be able to lead it in a different direction and, you know, take your own conversation on board. But the easiest thing is ask questions and stay attentive.
I think I just got a little bit fearful, and then I probably don't listen as hard, as intently as I should, because I'm just thinking, oh my God, I've got to speak to people I don't know.
And it's that most people are so busy thinking about that they're kind of switched off, and people read that. Mm-hmm. So whilst you've asked them something, your eyes are scanning the room, probably, for who else might I have to go and talk to, or who's here, or do they look scary, or are they okay? Whereas if you stay what I call fully in the moment, one of my phrases is the person who stays in fully in the moment will get the best from any given situation. So don't be thinking about your shopping at Sainsbury's. Don't be thinking about anything else. And I guess the other tip is that we all make assumptions. We're hardwired. We do. We make assumptions just on looks. We make assumptions on behaviour. But, you know, sometimes I've made myself talk to people. So, you know, try and stay with the conversation and get that real mental focus in there.
So we've just touched a little bit on what people struggle with, but what do you think people struggle with the most when it comes to verbal communication?
It's actually around pretty much what we were just talking about. So you can't, everyone's different, and some people struggle with group communications, some people struggle with talking to who they perceive as their boss or more superior or whatever. But generally, most people come and say that they feel uncomfortable in social situations and they don't like small talk. And, you know, in England, I always laugh that we're famous for weather because the one thing we talk about is the weather. And we do that. Why? We do that because we need to break down barriers and start a conversation. And so, you know, I always laugh that if you go for a meeting, it's normally, how did you get here? Was it okay? Or was it still raining outside? And we'll have, you know, a few minutes just on the weather. And it's simply an icebreaker to actually start to warm to someone. So I was actually on a cycle sailing holiday and we were out in Croatia. And there's people of all different nationalities on this boat, which was fab because, you know, you've got different cultures and different behaviours. And I don't know what I did, but on our table we had some Americans and we had somebody from Croatia and we had, I think it was an Austrian and a couple of English, et cetera, an Italian. And the American couple were lovely. And he was a dentist and had retired and he had his wife. Kathleen didn't talk that much, but on the last day, not everyone had cycled together, and on the last day it was arranged that it would be quite an easy cycle route so everyone could be together, which was great. And I'd had this joke all week that apparently in Germany, if you're out cycling on your own, it's etiquette that if you pass another cyclist you have to stop and take the time of day with them. And I thought, oh, this is really good. So we had this thing going that if we passed anyone in the group, then you had to stop and say, hi, how are you today, and etc., etc., and pass the time of day, which meant we all got to know each other a little bit better. So on the last day, Kathleen, I was passing by and I said, hi, Kathleen, how are you? And, you know, a bit of small talk. And she said, I said, isn't it great that we're all together today? And she talked about that. And she said, will you teach me that thing that you do? And I said, what thing that I do? And she said, you know, that thing that you do where you get people to talk. And I said to her, yeah, fine. So do you want to have a drink before dinner tonight? And we'll talk about it. So we met for a drink and she said, right, tell me what you do. How'd you do it? And I said, well, I'm not really sure, because you never know if you do something, how you do it. I said, but I think the thing is, Kathleen, that you want to get to the really interesting bit, the nub of the conversation. And I said, you know, if you said to somebody when you met them, oh, tell me if you have ever had an affair, they're going to be A, a bit affronted, and B, you're not really going to get a response. And she laughed and she went, and I said, so people have to start to trust you, and you have to build a conversation. And over time, people will reveal more and more about themselves, but they're not going to do it in the first few moments.
Mm.
And I think, you know, for some people, general chit-chat is just difficult, because it has no purpose, but its real purpose is being sociable. And I always think that my job is to make the other person feel at ease, because if we adapt our communication style to them, then they're happy. And that's, I think that's the key thing. That's the thing people struggle with is, you know, it's not a very interesting conversation about the weather or your daughter's first day at school. Well, maybe not to you, but clearly to that person, it's quite important.
Mm. So which goes back to listening again, doesn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, nice. Always listening.
See a theme coming out of this. And I was listening, you see, listen to what you say. Kind of along the lines of that, but more in the irony that I'm struggling to articulate my question there. I'm getting up more on stage now and doing a lot more talks, which actually petrifies me.
Right.
Have you got any tips for someone like myself to improve articulation?
Mm. Yeah, the thing about articulation is that in our speech mainly, including myself, we get lazy. So what we do is we cut words, we sort of mumble a little bit. But the thing is, if and you can see me now, if I am talking to you and I am using my mouth really well, which feels really exaggerated, then every single word will be crystal clear. So the key thing if you're standing up and presenting is remember, A, you might have a mic, but you still may be projecting. So you should be imagining that you're projecting your voice to the person furthest away.
Mm.
And the second is, it's a bit like being an actor. You know, you really need to use your voice, but these muscles around your mouth and lips don't get used enough. And so before you would go on stage, you should really do some exercises, everything from chewy toffee, as I call it, to ridiculous faces, yeah, to making sounds with your voice. Because I don't know if you've experienced this, but it's happened to me that, you know, I've gone to do a presentation, and, you know, I've travelled on the train, I've got there, but I've not really spoken to anybody for that morning. And so I go to open my mouth, and of course, my voice isn't warmed up. So warming up your voice is really, really important. And practicing. So practice using your mouth more, because it will come across well. And that's how people articulate.
There's a question that I have then that relates to that. So in our company, we're all quite young, and we often get thrown into it. Experiences that probably don't align with our own experience in the company, like in terms of our careers. We're probably quite early on in our careers,
right,
which means that we end up pitching to some really big clients.
Right.
And I notice tics, like verbal tics that people have. How do you spot that in yourself, and how do you stop yourself doing it? So people say like or
like,
sort of. Yeah. How do you spot that?
Well, generally, interestingly, I worked with a guy yesterday, and his very challenge was he wanted to stop saying like, or as he described it, stop sounding like he came from the hood, which was quite funny because he's a beautiful guy. Like is a filler word. It's a filler word for we don't know what to say. And pitches, very much like presentations, require some thought and rehearsal. Now, however good we are, it's easy to think that we can wing it, but the reality is we can't. So, you know, when I work with people on presentation skills, I'll spend 2 days with them. And the first day is all about the preparation. So the audience, the content, the visual aids, the structure, the objectives. Once that's all clear, the presentation will come together. The second day is all about the practice and the performance, because actually you're performing, you're on stage, you know, whether it's in front of 200 people in an audience or whether it's in front of, you know, the board of a company, you're still on stage. And the key thing here is people by people.
Mm.
So, you know, you guys may be young, but you're clearly successful and you do what you do very well. And that needs to come across. And so, you know, don't be put off by the suits, as I call it. I mean, I encounter them all the time, but you shouldn't be put off by the suits, because actually, you know, I've had quite a long career now, but I'm still learning things. And it's, you know, the younger generation coming through have got something to offer and we need to hear it. So I think it's practice, really. I would say preparation, preparation, preparation.
Mm.
And what you need to do as a team probably is coach each other. So, you know, every time somebody comes out with, well, you know, it's like it's really exciting and it's like you'll get loads of attention, just stop them and say, okay, what do you want to really say there? No one should read from a script when they're presenting. It's obvious. But you do need to have written it down probably in the first place and get to know it really well. And therefore, it just comes out naturally. And there's all sorts of tips and tricks, from mind maps to little structure boards in front of you just as prompts. But it really is down to practice.
Which is actually a really interesting point in terms of coaching. How, as managers and leaders, do you address that someone might have one of those verbal tics if they're not aware of it without knocking their confidence?
Good point. Well, I kind of take feedback as something different. So I often coach my people who come to see me and say, today you're in a really safe environment. You're just working with me. And that means that none of your peers, your boss, no one else is here. And this is your chance to really practice and shine, to shine. And what that means is that if we work on the premise there's no such thing as getting it wrong, which is a great premise, it's only feedback. And by that I mean, if you're giving feedback, then that's a chance for someone to learn from it and to correct it. But I do think there's an important element, particularly in corporate life, and that is, if you're giving someone feedback, you know, you're right, do it in a sensitive way, but also give them the support that they need to make that change. And it's back to what I originally observed in corporate life, is that I think companies promote people to certain roles because they're great at their job, but then they expect them to be great managers, great leaders, they great motivators. They expect them to have, you know, the gentle side to listen to the problems at home, because you can't ignore it. People will bring that stuff with them. They expect that, but they don't help them with that. You know, they expect them to be great presenters, but they don't give them any training.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think it has to be done in really good faith. We all know that the sandwich of the positive, negative, positive, but really it's about, you know, this is great, but I've observed that. Or what? How do you think? You know, give them the question. That's another good one.
Mm.
So how good do you think you are presenting? How do you feel about it? Are you totally comfortable with it? You know, what are your fears and concerns? And everybody has them, but then you've given them a chance to talk about that, which means you can pick it up and move with it rather than probably having to address it outright.
In the podcast, my thing is so, I always say so before I start, that's my thing. And you tell me off for it. And I didn't know I did it until he told me off for it. In the nicest possible way, feedback.
So, your so is actually the equivalent to what I call the pause.
It's my thinking time.
Yes. Yeah. And what you're really doing is you're going so, and in your head, I think this is what's going on. You're going, well, what am I saying next? Yeah?
Yeah.
And what I advise people to do is don't be afraid of the pause. Really powerful presenters use pause because it electrifies the audience at times. I once watched Robbie Williams, I think it was at the Milton Keynes Bowl, and he came on stage and the crowd went wild. And he stood there, and he's cocky anyway, and he just walked around, and he's waving his hands, asking for more applause. And he said not a word for probably well over, could have been a minute, minute and a half, and he just lapped it up and lapped it up. And, of course, it built the audience into a frenzy, but it delivered a message is that, you know, look at me, I'm special. I don't even have to talk. Look at how you respond. And so don't be afraid of the pause.
Yeah, I need to think about that rather. I think it's an automatic thing. It just comes out because it's me gearing myself up to say what I'm going to say next. So I've really got to think about saying so.
Well, my so is a right, probably, because I'll be.
Oh, I just have copy of you. Know.
So, yeah, I'll be faffing about at home. My husband's waiting for me. I can see the irritation. And so I go, oh, right, meaning I'm coming. But it's really just a stall. And he said, you always say right when you're not really coming. You're almost ready. So there
it's
you go.
It's so funny, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's so funny. I get asked quite a lot of questions about interviews.
Oh, yeah.
And how to tackle interviews. Have you got any tips for how to portray confidence during an interview? I like to think of myself a bit like a swan, where I come across as quite calm, but underneath I'm paddling away.
Okay.
But I wondered if you had any tips that you could give to the listeners about interview skills.
Yeah, so again, it's normally on the other side. It's normally people going to interviews. But as the interviewer, I think you have to change your thinking. The challenge, I believe, for interviews is that for the interviewer, you want to get the best possible person to fit with the job and the company, and the interviewee the same. But, you know, history kind of has built it that, you know, that the company's in the controlling seat and the interviewee has to impress. And actually, if we turn that around and say it has to fit for both parties. So, you know, you might go to an interview and decide you don't want to work with that business. And actually, that's a saving grace for the business, as you will know, because you don't want someone in your business who made the wrong choice. So for you, ask yourself the question, why are you paddling underneath? Why do you think you feel like that? What do you think is going on for you?
I think that I like to try and portray a persona of calm.
Oh, okay.
So no one else sees
what's happening.
Yeah.
There are various things that you can do, from breathing techniques and relaxation exercises. But I think this switch in your head, which is you're not really trying to impress them. You need to be yourself, because I think if they're working with you, you are going to be yourself on most days, aren't you? That's who you are. So they need to see that persona. And the more relaxed you are, the more relaxed they are going to be. You know, it's a two-way process. And so if you can really chill, again, preparation. You know, lots of senior people, I've seen it done all the time, have interviews in their diary and they make no time for them, other than they pop to the loo 5 minutes before and grab the CV. And you're on a hiding to nothing, because you won't have prepped enough to think, what's this CV really say? That doesn't make sense. Or I'm curious about this. Or that sounds interesting. And so if you've already prepared that, then you have an agenda that you want to get through. And equally, the interviewee's probably got their own agenda. So I think it's preparation.
Sensing a theme.
Yeah, there is a bit of a theme, and it probably sounds boring, but, you know, life has taught me that it's quite important.
Yeah, I think we run at such a speed nowadays as well, in the way that we communicate, in how we communicate, and the way of the world in the workplace, that we don't take enough time, I think.
I think, you know, I know digital and your world, and it's amazing what we can now do, and I've watched it change in my lifetime. But there is definitely, I see a theme where it's very easy to just sort of deal with stuff corporately, but actually taking time, listening, observing. You know, it's a bit like if you sit in a coffee shop on your own and you observe, you see an awful lot. And sometimes we don't take enough time to stand back and observe. We don't take enough time to prepare. Then that's always going to create a certain amount of either missed opportunity or possibly anxiety.
Mm. It's very interesting, actually, because, yeah, I think, especially now, and what I can see from the younger workforce, and especially the ones that are coming through, like the Gen Zs that are starting work now, they don't like to talk on the phone. They don't like face-to-face conversations. Communication happens in the workplace, happens over email or message.
Mm.
And I struggle a bit with that. And you can't get tone.
No, there's no tone. So I put it like this. Some of the corporate businesses I work with, particularly on the more strategic change, and I see this a lot, you know, Generation Y, Generation Z, and, you know, scarily in the next, I think it's 6 years, Generation Y is going to be 75% of the global workforce and Z another 14%. So, you know, what we're really saying is a lot of my generation will either not be bothered or will go. The challenge, so I always say to them, if you, you know, I'll say, have you done something? And the general answer is, yeah, I sent an email. And my response, quite curtly, is often, well, did they get it? Did they read it? Were they in the office? Is it a priority? Are they coming back to us? When will we get a response? And the thing that I think is really important is that I talk about seeing the whites of someone's eyes. So if you really want to get a response from somebody and you sit in front of them, 80% of what we're saying is nonverbal. So you people can say yes. And so if you're looking at someone and they're saying yes, but their body language is telling you something different, believe the body language. So if we take that scenario and then we move to a telephone, what we've got by telephone is just the verbal cues. But verbal cues are quite strong.
Mm.
So from the pause to the hesitation to the slightly quicker voice because they're getting irritated to the, you might hear the sigh or the, you know, you can regulate an awful lot from that phone conversation. So let's take email. And here's a basic rule of thumb. We talk approximately at 120 words per minute. And here's a tip for you. When you go on stage, you need to slow down dramatically from how we would normally speak. So if we talk at 120 words a minute, what I always say is we don't have trained typists anymore. None of us have been taught QWERTY. Mm. So think about it. Do the maths. You're going to spend an awful lot of time writing an email when you could have picked up the phone, had a conversation. And the response is normally, oh, yes, but we, let's face it, need to cover our backs or confirm. But you can have a really healthy conversation and go back with three bullets in an email to just confirm the things that have been discussed. And exactly what you were saying, Katie, the problem with email is I actually believe whilst it has advantages for global business, it is slowing businesses down dramatically. And it is taking away the social communication, which is so important in people buying people.
Mm-hmm.
And you'll know in the business you're in, very few of us are copywriters. And so, again, what I'm seeing a lot of with Generation Z and some of Generation Y is they're not great at the written word. So their English language skills, their grammar, their spelling can be poor. And organisations will judge your organisation on what is sent out. You know, I'm with you 100% that, you know, they need to get on the phone, but, you know, maybe you need to give them a bit of help in terms of phone skills.
So we've talked about verbal. I'd love to talk about non-verbal.
Okay.
And what we can be doing in terms of our non-verbal communication to make us better.
Okay.
What do we do wrong and what do we do right?
Okay. Well, there's kind of a few facets to this. So, first of all, our body language, I try to say this, is an outward manifestation of our inward processing. So, in other words, what's going on in here will manifest itself here, and that's from head to toe. And also, it's subconscious. So, unless we're very practiced, then we have little or no control over it. Which is why, you see, we're all far more intuitive than we think we are. And I laugh, but the reason we cross over the road from the nutter is because we know it's the nutter and we don't want to engage, okay? So most of us intuitively see a lot more than we give ourselves credit for, and we subconsciously don't always clock it. So first of all, if, for instance, in your role, my suggestion would be that it's that thing, staying in the moment, you know, being very focused, listening. Because if what you're getting back is incongruent, then seek to understand with more questions or clarity, because you'll get to the nub of what's really going on. In terms of how we give better body language, well, I can teach people a greater awareness of their body language, which means also teaching them to think in a different way. So sometimes we have a trigger, which is when I see this, this happens here, this is the response we get. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
And therefore, I work with people on what are their triggers and how to learn a more useful response to that. The obvious ones, if we were just sort of generalising, is that, you know, if you're not going to give good eye contact, you're going to come into real problems, because people will either think you're lying or deceitful or you've got something to hide. That may not be the case. You just may have problems with eye contact, but it is going to be an issue. In terms of posture, you know, you talk about people need to exude confidence. You know, posture is important, the way we stand. Shoulders back, shoulders back, head up.
Yeah.
Imagine the invisible cord running through. You know, if we were standing, we talk about grounding to the ground, and, you know, the way we stand. I'm 5'1", but I don't know that. In my head, I think I'm probably 6'2". But, you know, if I walk into somewhere, I will always think first about my posture. And, you know, I'm going in there to do a job, so I need to look around. And so I have my head high and my eye contact is high. And, you know, it's like I'm in control here.
Mm.
So that's quite important. And, you know, there's obvious things. So the eyes, you know, if we start rolling our eyes, it's fairly obvious, isn't it, that people aren't impressed. If we grimace, if we tut, if we sigh, they're all signals that things aren't going well. And just to add to that, there's two ways to deal with that. There is an interesting point that they do say in NLP terms, the communication you're getting back is based on what you're giving out. So we always take the view that actually adapt your own communication, and that's back to observing and listening.
Mm.
Is that?
Yeah.
You know?
That's really good.
Okay.
It's very helpful. I know that you and Dodds have had a conversation before this, and there was one thing that came out of it that I thought was super interesting. How is it possible to understand how people are feeling by studying their body language? And I think what I want to get out of that is, if you look at someone and their arms are crossed, doesn't necessarily mean they're closed off.
No, and I often laugh and say, you know, if it's girlies like us and it's very cold, then probably we're just doing that for the obvious reason. The key thing about body language is don't take any one thing in isolation. There's a big thing in sales when we teach rapport building, is that there's a certain amount of mirroring of body language. But the really poor salespeople try it and it fails every time. Because if someone suspects you're copying their body language, then they shut off straight away. But if you see somebody in rapport, you know what I mean by rapport?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I often say, look at a couple in a restaurant. And, you know, a rapportful conversation is like a game of tennis. One chats away and then the other chats away and the other chats away. And then one will take a bit of their drink and within seconds, the other one will follow. And that means they're in rapport. So when we think body language is very much about being fully in the moment and listening and tuning in. And I think, yeah, you can't take one thing in isolation. If, for instance, you've lost eye contact or you're suddenly, you know, over there or looking at Dodds all the time and going, then I'm going to know there's something wrong. Mm. If you're, you know, you're giving me verbal nods, that's an acknowledgement that you're tuned into what I'm saying. But if you get more than one thing, so someone's tapping their foot, that's normally a sign that, you know, they're irritated. You can see clench, you know, or you see it. Board meetings, people clenching fists, you know, you see people gritting their teeth, you see their face grimacing. It's obvious that everything isn't okay. So it is tuning in, really.
It's being aware.
Yeah.
I struggle sometimes personally with having so much that I've got in here that I've got to think about, that when sometimes people are talking to me, it's hard for me not to think about all that stuff, especially when I've got maybe my laptop in front of me because I need to make notes, but things are popping and annoying me at the same time. And I sometimes lose concentration and I worry about that because I know that I'm not giving someone my full attention. It's probably an obvious answer. It's probably shut things down. But how do I switch my mind down?
Person who stays fully in the moment will get the best from every situation. We can multitask. We drive with our subconscious. You know, it isn't true that you have to be fully on it. Have you tried yoga, for starters?
I have.
Has it helped?
Yes, but I need to go back to it. And I've also started actually doing midweek meditation with the work. We have 15 minutes of meditation on a Wednesday morning.
Good. I think the obvious is what you said. I mean, I talk about people in sales, and I say when the phone rings, you're doing this, you're tapping away on the PC, and you pick up phone. Stop. Doesn't matter if you're in the middle of an email, doesn't matter if you're reading something, stop. And in your case, just close the lid over.
Yeah.
And then direct your attention to whatever is going on. I mean, the other one is that it is difficult when you're holding lots of information in your head on various different topics. And, you know, I've had times in my life when I'm juggling 2 and 3 clients and my head is just exploding. And I think just write down the things by client or by list or by activity or however you organise yourself, write down, type it in your PC, however you do it, a dictation on your phone, reminders list. I mean, there's all sorts of apps and tools now for all of that. But just clear it from your head because it's not, in personal view, it's not really going to help. It's not serving you well, is it?
No, because I get frustrated with myself as well, which then will come out in how I talk to other people because I feel like I let people down then because my mind's in a million places.
Yeah.
I need to get it out of here into something else.
Yeah.
Yeah. And now I don't know why I stopped. I used to just do this every morning and I've stopped doing them. I don't
know
why.
You know, I don't know whether you have a PA or somebody. But
no, need one.
Well, probably.
Second time that's been said today, that's what I was saying.
You probably need somebody who can, you know, you can give that stuff to. I mean, I've project directed on projects, but I always say to the client, give me a number two. And by that, I mean as somebody who is making sure people are doing what they're supposed to be doing when I'm not here, and also who will learn from me. Because when I leave your business, it means we've been successful. But to keep that ongoing and to keep that knowledge in the business, you should retain it. You're paying for it.
Mm.
And a bit in the same way, really. You know, if you've got somebody, it might not be a PA or, you know, whatever you want to call them. But, you know, they're there for you to offload. And, you know, when I've been doing projects like that, when I've had a number two and I've gone, right, I'm leaving, but can you make sure this, or even then drop with an email at 10 o'clock at night and then a call the next day. But it just means that you can then park it and it resides in a place and they can come back to you and say, you know, Katie, you need to be on these, which is fine, isn't it?
Yeah, I prefer that. So worry about missing stuff. Constant worry, that's what goes on.
Don't worry.
No, I know.
You know, we can worry about things that may never happen.
All the time.
And we can't change the past, but we can strongly influence our future.
Yeah. I have identified that I've got imposter syndrome.
Mm-hmm.
And I fear saying something wrong. So I've stood up there on stage and I have to be talking about a subject that I feel confident in So I'll only choose talks now that I know that I can do.
Yeah.
Because I don't want to, because I've come into the world of social media when my background was very traditional media.
Okay.
And I feared saying the wrong thing and then making the company look stupid.
Okay. So I'm glad you brought this up because it is a topic that should be discussed. So first and foremost, most people are not natural presenters. But if we go back to what I said earlier, is there's no such thing as getting it wrong. So if you have prepared well, and it is key, so I will always say to everyone, never present anyone else's presentation.
Mm.
Just don't even think about it. How can it possibly come across well? So have your own material, know how you want to tell it. But if we look at it as there's no such thing as getting it wrong, then it's just feedback. And we learn from feedback and we move on. And the other thing I would say to you, Katie, is if you think that you're presenting, probably, I was hesitant to come and do this, which I didn't share, because I still struggle with the fact that I think everybody knows what I know. And that it's taken me a very long time to learn that, no, they don't. And for you, not everybody knows what you know.
Mm.
So you've got something to give and to give value to the world. And if you make a presentation, my view is that each person in that audience, you know, it's a very varied audience quite often. They're all seeking different things. But if each person takes away one nugget of information or is a little bit more informed about one thing, then I think you've done your job.
Mm.
And the most important thing, therefore, is, you know, to say, what's the worst that can go wrong? And I say this, but what's the worst? Well, you can forget what you wanted to say. Well, you can always get over that by saying, and do you know what? I've forgotten what I was going to say. Just give me a second to collect my thoughts. And you know, you make a joke of it. And you might, so what if you get something wrong? Then, you know, it takes all of us to be a big person. If it truly was wrong, just say, I'm terribly sorry. Clearly I've got that wrong. I will go back and research that again. And I'll come back to you. Or can I take your card and can we talk about this another time?
Mm.
Know your subject, know your audience, know your venue. Mm. And if all of those are covered, then there isn't that many things that can go wrong.
Well, I have just got so much out of that.
Oh, good.
I want to say a massive thank you. You've taught me so much in that time.
Great.
So you shouldn't be worried about doing it because there's so many things that I'm going to make sure I take back into Social Chain as well and try and help people internally. Because a lot of people want to get on stage. We hear it all the time. They see Steve on stage. They know I'm on stage. And they say that they want to do it as well, but they don't know where to start. And we also struggle with rehearsals. People fear rehearsals because they don't want to look stupid while they're practicing. So there's definitely tips there that I'm going to take back into the office.
Brilliant.
So I just want to say a massive thank you for your time.
My pleasure.
Thoroughly enjoyed it.
Yeah, lovely to meet you.
And you. Thank you so much.